Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm your host, Jody, and today we have a very special episode. We are celebrating 100 episodes together. Can you believe it? Gotta tell you, didn't think I'd be here when I started this podcast last, September, October. Boy, what a wild ride it has been, and it's all thanks to 90 Day Fiancé. So what better way? I mean, I could not have planned it any better than to talk about 90 Day Fiancé Tell All Part 1 and 90 Day Fiancé What Now. And I'll be bringing you both those specials as well as some Teen Mom 2 and Married at First Sight. But first, let's quickly get some business out of the way. I know it's your favorite part of the show right now, so let's quickly speed through it. Check out patreon.com/realitybpod. Really helps support me and this podcast that starts at just $1 a month. Head on over there. You can see the different levels. But again, that starts at just $1 a month, and you would not believe how far your 100 pennies gets us. Also, make sure to check out Moms on the Rocks podcast, not your mom's podcast. We have a blast over there. We're talking everything from celebrity blind items to just all the other crazy shit that goes on that I'm not talking about here on this podcast. So head on over there. That's Moms on the Rocks. And if you want to find me on Instagram or Twitter, at RealityBPod, I'll hook you right up. Okay, let's get into the tell-all first, shall we? Well, we start out, they're all walking in the studio. And I got to tell you, just the music that they set it to was very housewivesy. And then we see, holy boob, Chantel. Good God, strap those things away. Get some baby Bjorns or a proper fitting from Molly. Just tuck the girls in. Now we also get to see Team Annie and David. They march in wearing royal blue, like a matching ensemble, which seemed quite the ballsy choice. I mean, royal blue couldn't have been baby blue, any other blue, but royal. They are the least royal of any couples. And I gotta think that even Meghan and Princess Kate would be, just as equally massively offended as I was. Now we also see Russ and Paula and blah, blah, blah. They say that they've been going through a lot. We're going to talk about them briefly later because I fucking cannot with Russ and Paula. Now we also get to see Molly and Luis. They're not together because Molly says that Luis is a narcissistic turd. Love that term. And I think I'm just going to adopt that in my new daily language. Not just a narcissist, but a narcissistic turd. Now then, Queen Sean arrives. Sean Robinson, let me pause right there for a second. I myself have given her some heat before. Not always the best in some of these tell-alls. She used to do Sister Wives too, right? I think so. But I gotta tell you, this episode, she did pretty well and she looked fucking phenomenal. I also loved how producers just totally broke down that fourth wall. We're seeing them run here, run there. Where are they going between green rooms? You know how my imagination likes to just do its own thing. And it started occurring to me later in the episode that they almost had to show all of that hustle and bustle in the beginning because it made following everyone into the green rooms later, especially during that lunch where Anfisa took the whole pizza, it made that scene make more sense. You staying with me here? Okay. Well, stay with me here even more because, as you know, this episode was just back and forth, bouncing back and forth between couples. So I'm going to do my best to organize it because you all know that I'm type A and I like to organize, but I will do the best I can. Now, Anfisa and George show up. And George, sure enough, is like, oh, yeah, I lied about everything to make her look bad. You know, water under the bridge. No, not quite, George. We're not through with you yet. Now, Pedro. Yes, I know I get some heat for being a Pedro apologist. But if you are not on Pedro's side after seeing family Chantel attack him, and even Chantel herself still holding Pedro's feet to the fire and not fucking Rivers, you had to love Pedro after he stood up and he goes to hug Anfisa. I mean, I don't know if it's like the mix of good and evil or like a yin and yang, but just seeing those two hug each other, it brought just hope to my heart that maybe with everything going on in this political climate, we can all come together, join hands, we can all share a Coke together, we can do this, we're in this together. Now then we get to Paola getting her hair done, and I think she's talking with Molly at this point, and Paola is just freaking loving herself with that crazy red clown hair. And you know, she's like, I'm just going to go and apologize to Anfisa. You know, I shouldn't have said those things about her not being that pretty. I'm just going to put it all behind us. So Paola walks into the room where David and Annie and I believe Chantel was in there too. And she walks over to apologize to Anfisa, and Anfisa just stands up and walks out. And then Anfisa's like, oh, well, oh my God, she's such a bitch. I'm not coming here to apologize anyway. Okay, sure, Paola. We literally just heard you say you were walking in there specifically to apologize to her. So way to play that one off, which makes every attempt of hers later to be like, I didn't say anything bad about you. Complete bullshit, because she just called her a bitch right there and then, not even having anything to do with the previous tell-all. Now, let's get to the stage where Chantel is being questioned first. And she's being asked by Sean, you know, what are your feelings about this whole argument between River, really your entire family, and Pedro? And Chantel, even after she has seen these episodes, even after she has seen the replay of this fight, she's still standing by her family and River's side that Pedro attacked River. What the fuck is going on? Now, another delusional, narcissistic turd is George, and he's sitting there, and he is 100% sure he's not the father. I don't even think we need a DNA test at this point to put this to rest, because if he was so certain he was not the father, he would have been running down to that DNA store with or without Anfisa to get that thing taken, right? Doesn't make sense. Like my Queen Judge Judy says, if it doesn't make sense, you're not telling the truth. Now, Molly, we jump to her. She starts saying that she felt like she was the one who was going crazy when she was fighting with Luis. Now, this is where, you know, my hatred for David, well, it multiplied by about 78%, because as Molly is saying, she was fighting with Luis, and yeah, there's a tape of her smacking the thing out of the way because she was disgusted that he was looking up big booty porn. But David is like, no, Luis called me and he said that Luis was being abused by you. And, you know, we only have one side of the story. Like, David, really, you're going to try to be our voice of reason right now? No, just keep your mouth shut. I think David, for some reason, just thinks because he's the oldest one on the stage, he automatically has some sage wisdom. No, he's probably got some sage-flavored turkey that he snagged off the craft service table, but he definitely doesn't have any sage wisdom. Now, let's talk Azin and Nicole. They admit that they had had sex, and I don't know if it was just me, but Nicole's voice got really deep, like she went through puberty, the reverse puberty of what our boy Bobby from Married at First Sight went through. If you don't know what I'm talking about, get your ass over there and watch those episodes. I think there is like a 13-year-old boy who is hiding in plain sight saying that he's 28 or 32. I don't know what he is, but biologically, the dude's 13. Now, okay, we're talking about sex lives. So Azin and Nicole said yes, that they've had sex. Then Russ and Paolo pipe in and they just claim that, oh, nothing from their sex life has changed. Well, neither has your storyline, which is why we all want to see you off the show. Now, George and Anfisa, they say that their sex life has gotten better, but it's nobody's business, according to George. Like, Anfisa was like, oh, it's great. Maybe that's good for her, quote, prostitutorial business. I'm just saying. But George says it's nobody's business. So I'm just going to take a little gander based on George looking down, avoiding eye contact, doing his little slap hands thing. We've talked about his telltale lying little indications. I think George probably is only getting intimate with his hand. Now, David and Annie, take a minute here if you are eating or drinking anything. Let's just all put that down. All right. Now, David and Annie say they are still having sex. David gets that disgusting Grinch grin on his face. And Annie says that although they had to refrain a bit when David's son was staying with them, they had a little system set up. So what they would do is David would go in the other room. Annie would then grab an unsuspecting pillow off her bed and hump it and make noises to see if David could hear it from the other room. I mean, what did that down-filled cubic yard of fabric do to you to have you be, I'm not even going to replay the sound of it because I can hear it echoing in my head and it's making me sick. Sick enough that I don't even want to eat the delicious looking Panera scone in my kitchen right now. Now, Nicole and Azen, again, they said they're shy, but they are doing it. Do we believe that? I don't know. I think maybe they both think they're doing it, but it is like Nicole's version of sex, which could be anything from putting two straws in a Starbucks lid or taking down an entire box of delicious Moroccan delicacies together. I'm just saying. Now let's have a little segment with Chantel and Pedro. Again, a lot of the same replaying of the fight over and over and over again. But Chantel, again, even when it is put in her face and she is seeing it with her own two eyes and her own two boobs, she still thinks that she sticks up for Pedro in front of her family, but he doesn't stick up for her in front of his family. But you know what? That's okay, because Chantel says she's just going to give up. Okay, Chantel, I've said it once, I've said it a million times. She is a perpetual victim, and if she thinks that she sticks up for Pedro in front of her family, I would love to see what putting him down looks like, because I don't think she has even said one nice thing about him to her family. Now, then we go to this little break, and Chantel is boo-hooing and crying, and she's got the producer tapping her on the shoulder saying, it's okay, just shut your boobs. Now, let's talk about George and Anfisa, because damn it, Sean just came in hot from this commercial break, and she just went guns blazing towards these two. So she says something along the lines of like, oh, this was a really big season full of lies and drama and violence, and let's take a look at George abandoning his child who's 10 years old, who doesn't give a shit. Roll the tape. I mean, she really just laid it all out there. I know Anfisa caught on to it, but George was just still sitting there like, just staring at his feet for a while. Now, Anfisa ends up giving Sean the whole backstory of this again because George just, I don't know if he's preparing his lying lisp, the thing I talked about last week, like he knew he was just going to have to double down on all of his lies. He's here. He's live. He's got nothing else to lose. I mean, we all know he's lying anyway, so he might as well just give it one last shot. So Anfisa tells us what she's already told us previously, that this ex of George's contacted her right when they started dating, but she didn't really pay too much attention to it. No, I'm not saying Anfisa is perfect for that, because think about that. If you just started dating someone and they call you up and they're like, hey, guess what? They're a parent that you don't know about. You might want to question it a little bit, but okay, she didn't. Well, then as time went on, this woman's persistence just kept, you know, getting stronger and stronger, which is why Anfisa believes her. I mean, if she was just making it up, what would be her benefit? What would be her gain to keep going with it? Now to George, he feels like that is a reason why she should lie again, because it makes no sense. And George is a freaking liar. So George is now just personally offended that his ex won't back down. But here's the thing, you asshole. Of course she's not going to back down. She just wants to know the truth. She wants to be able to tell her daughter as her daughter grows up, this is your father. And she wants to prove it to you, George, that you are the father. And then the thing that just was icing on the cake for me, again, I've talked about my hate for David, made it even stronger. We were at like, what, 78%? Now we're at like 84. He's sitting over there just smiling, just grinning like the Cheshire Cat or whatever the fuck that thing is. He is the worst. It's like he enjoys seeing other people lie and get caught, which is crazy, because he does the same thing, and then he boo-hoos when he gets caught, but we'll get to him in a minute. Now then, the best part of the whole thing, George's ex is on the line. And I gotta tell you, the sound quality was fantastic. So whoever that sound mixer was, the sound engineer over there at TLC, bravo. Now come to find out, George and Anfisa never followed through with this ex after they had that phone call on camera. Now this is where I was kind of like, you know what, Anfisa, I was all team Anfisa for a while, but now I'm starting to feel a little fooled, a little betrayed. Because if Anfisa really wanted George to step up and her intentions were really about this girl like she said it was, because she herself has been there, her father died when she was young, she didn't have a dad, then you would have been on George. You would have reached out to the ex. Maybe there's some things that we're not seeing, but that is pretty damn shitty that neither of them have followed up since that phone call. And the only reason they did that was because producers were there probably making them do it. But George says that he didn't do it because, you know, he's been busy. He just never got around to it. You haven't been able to get around to it? Well, you've been able to get around to a couple fast food restaurants because we saw you fisting those double quarter pounders with cheese down your throat. So you could have, once again, swung by the DNA store. I'm sure it was probably next to some sort of Jack in a Box or In-N-Out Burger where you were picking up breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Now, then Paula decides to get in there and stir the frickin' pot. Because as the ex is talking to George and Anfisa, Paula's just sitting there with a big old smile on her face. She's whispering, making comments, and all this kind of shit. And then Russ pipes in, and he starts bestowing upon all of us the virtues of true love, telling us all what true love is about. Okay, Russ, tell us more about true love as you are flubbing your lines with your Colombian love triangle between you and Juan and the motorcycle gang. Just shut your frickin' mouth. You look like an idiot. Briefly, we then move on to Nicole and Azen because they're just Skyping in. And to be honest, it really bummed me out. Sometimes those Skype in calls can be really good. Kind of like how Jenny and Larry from Before the 90 Days, when she Skyped in, I freaking loved it. But the two of them together, Azen and Nicole, just didn't have the right je ne sais quoi, if you will. Okay, so they are over there in Morocco. They're Skyping in, and they start grilling Azen about his past with this girl in Belarus. Were they engaged? Why would you go to Belarus? The most interesting thing that came out of that was from Anfisa, actually, because she's like, no one goes to Belarus just for like freaking spring break. Like, it's not a big tourist attraction. So there would only be one reason that he's there. And once again, Russ and Paula just whispering under their breath. I feel like Paula came in there. She was saying that Anfisa came in thinking she was better than everyone else, but Paula clearly thinks she is the chosen Sports Illustrated swimsuit model of the year. You'll know that reference if you were like a kid from the 80s, like that was like the big thing. I think that's what Paula thinks she is. Like, she is the chosen one of the 90 Day Fiancé women. She just thinks her shit doesn't stink, but really, she just reeks of Farrah Abraham. I think because they go to the same hairstylist, I'm getting the same vibe from them. Okay, who else do we have? Oh, David and Annie, duh. Ashley is Skyping in to talk to us. And man, I have never loved a full sleeve or a shoulder tattoo before. I especially hate them on Teen Moms, but I gotta tell you, I think it fits Ashley. I am digging Ashley. Now, her problem with David is stemming from David really just taken off and abandoning she and her, well, hold on, I was going to say she and her brothers, but I think there's a brother and another sister. Now, weird, weird, weird. I don't know if it was just me or was Ashley saying that she and Annie and her siblings and Annie, they all hang out, but David doesn't. Like, I get, oh, you want your new spouse to be hanging out with your kids, getting to know them better, and you maybe not go out with them all the time. But it sounds like David is just passing Annie on to be kind of like his spokesperson. That's freaking weird. That's bizarre. It's actually kind of creepy, I think. So I can see why Ashley is just fed up with David. I believe her 100% when she says David only comes around when he needs something, and David didn't even have anything to say. He's just sitting there with his, like his big dumb ox eyes, the ox that he can't afford eyes. And then we cut to the tape and we have Annie telling your mom on the phone how Ashley breeds like a rabbit, that she's moody. And then Sean is like, hey, Annie, do you want to like apologize, or do you think you might have said anything that was like horribly rude or offensive, or you just want to, you know, smooth things over right now because you look like a freaking raging bitch? And Annie's like, I feel bad, but I'm honest. Oh, I wish I had like a tenth of Annie's balls at some points in my life, because she really gives no shits. And I felt bad for Ashley. Anyone hearing that is going to be like, what the fuck? You don't even know me. And then I don't blame her for saying, well, you know what? You're going to say that. I'm going to share how you two actually met. Between, you know, you, me, and the third person listening to this, we all know how David and Annie met. They met at a, quote, dick-sucking bar. And Annie serviced David, and after said provided service, they became an item. Now, David says, oh, no, 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 that's not true. You're just believing social media, Ashley. But Ashley's like, no, actually, we know from a firsthand source that you two met at, you know, the dick-sucking bar, and stop lying about it. Truth be told, and in all fairness, if I was defending Anfisa with her alleged webcamming prostitutorial work, I can't really come down on Annie for this. I think the whole thing is just that they're lying about it. Kind of a different situation with George and Anfisa because they were partners kind of stabbing each other in the back. This one, I think it's just a greater indication of David continually lying to his own kids. But really, like Molly and Anfisa said, does it really matter at this point? They're married. She's here. They're sucking off their friends and leeching off the government. Well, hopefully not the government, at least Chris. So yeah, you may get some backlash from friends and family or people like us watching the show, but at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. Sean now wants to get down to talking about having kids and about David's vasectomy and how is that going to work. And as Annie starts answering questions, things start moving and pointing and going on stage. The cameras were just looking here, zooming there. And Paula was pointing at, I didn't realize she was pointing at George, but apparently she was pointing at George to alert him to look at some sort of production staff. Well, Anfisa thought that Paula was pointing at her, talking about her or something. So Anfisa flicks off Paula. And then it was like, gloves were off. They both start going at each other. So Anfisa stands up. She goes over to Paula and she's like, why the hell are you provoking me? And then Paula, oh, I wanted to freaking get up and punch her in the face. And she's like, I never talk about you. I can take you down, little girl. Oh, she's going to hit me. Oh, I don't want to take her down because I can take her down. I can lift weights. I know I have a horrible impression of her, but Paula was just at, as Anfisa said, she was at a whole other level. So Paula, she does her little housewives saunter off stage saying she doesn't have to take this shit from Anfisa. She never did anything to her. But you did, Paula. You talked shit about her at the last reunion saying, George can do better. She's not that pretty. You were talking shit about the way that she looks. She might have said stuff about the prostitutorial or mail order bride, that kind of shit. So you can't say you don't care and you never did anything bad about her when we can see it clearly on tape. Anfisa knows it. We all know it. No one feels bad for you. And you're not some big, bad, mean girls chick. No one can stand you, honey. So then everyone goes to lunch. This was my favorite part because I love a behind the scenes and I love to see what reality TV people eat. I saw sushi. I saw some salad. I think Paolo was eating some sort of like a chopped kale salad, maybe some craisins mixed in. And then Aunt Fisa and George come in, and they take a whole pizza each for lunch, and they take it in the other room. Now, I'm not saying this is wrong, but I'm saying that it breaks my heart because I can't even eat a slice of pizza without gaining 2 pounds. That's right. Had a slice of pizza last night, and I'm up 2 pounds. Motherfucker. And here's Aunt Fisa looking phenomenal, and she's got a whole pizza on her lap. I mean, Jesus Christ, life is not fair. Maybe I'm just reaping the karma that I sow at this point, but I say my prayers at night. I'm a good person, so let me have these calories just for once, freaking universe. All right, now let me get back to business here, because Chantel, of all people, confronts Paula and is like, well, actually, you aren't the victim because you were kind of talking shit about Aunt Fisa during the last tell-all. To which Paula says the classic Real Housewives line, I was just joking. Sure, Paula, you were just joking. Well, let me guess, Juan was just joking too. Russ was just joking too. Fuck off with your just joking. I'm looking at your face and it looks like you're joking, because she really truly looks like the Joker at this point, whatever the hell she's done with her face. Now, later in this lunch hour, we're still back in this little lunch room, green room, whatever you want to call it, whatever these fancy reality people call it. And Molly just sits down and she's like, hey, buds. Oh, that's so weird that Luis called you. When did he call you? What did he say? How do we get a hold of him? And David and Pedro are like, I don't know. And then David gets a little wild hair up his ass and he's like, I can call him right now. And Annie starts in. She's like, oh yeah, he's called many times. Now, these two have never really looked more bonded, okay? They are just birds of the same asshole feather because they love stirring it up. I mean, Annie's eyes lit up and she was like, oh yeah, he called many times, many, many, many times. And David, he's never moved so fast. He's never had as quick of a reflex as he did when he grabbed his phone. I mean, if his reflex is to get a jobber that quick, he wouldn't be in this problem. But he just wants to dial up Luis, stir the pot. He freaking loves it. Now, unfortunately, he calls him then and it goes to voicemail. I felt bad for Molly because clearly this isn't all for TV. This isn't just made up drama. Like, this shit is real for her. Now, after lunch, we get back to the couches. Nicole is off in the little TV looking on, and I'm sure she's pretty pissed that she missed out on a free lunch, as I would be as well. And we go back to Nicole and Azen to grill them about the whole money and job situation. Gotta give it to Sean. She really stuck to it. She was not afraid to ask the questions that we all wanted to ask. Number one, how much money did you send him? Why Azen isn't working, and what is the plan? Well, Nicole says it's none of anyone's business, and Azen doesn't work because he quit, because he had to talk to Nicole. Now, everyone just starts laughing, rolling their eyes, looking at each other, and their plan is that Azen, well, he'll get a job here or there in Morocco while Nicole is there for a year, and then when he comes here, he will look for a job. But really, the reason that he doesn't have a job there is it's just hard to find one. Then Russ says under his breath, ain't that tough to get a job? And what are you going to do when you come here and you get here? What are you going to do? It's not that easy to find a job, but you know, you got to get a job. Okay, Russ, correct me if I'm wrong, please. But I swear, last season or the season before, maybe even all the previous seasons, wasn't Russ out of a job and he himself was looking for a job and Paola was looking for a job? Okay, pot meet kettle, just like Aunt Fisa told him later. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then when Azen said, oh, he'll get a job when they get here, all of them start saying, well, it's not that easy to find jobs here in America. And who's quiet now? David. Yeah, the one who was popping in all the time, rolling his eyes, little comments here and there. He doesn't have a damn thing to say because he himself doesn't have a job. He should be the last one talking. Which begs the question, why at some point did not everyone turn their hate on David? Or maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe we're going to see that next week. Now, we talked about the money with Azen and Nicole, and then we get to the recording. Well, okay, everyone's laughing, as are we, because it's obvious Azen was talking to another girl. very recently, but oh God, it's so weird. He just doesn't remember which woman it was because it was a joke. It was a joke. I was drunk. Now, Sean, again, I know I'm just like her best friend or whatever this episode, but she held Asen's feet to the flame and said, you know, it sounds like you're making light of this. You're laughing and everything. I mean, Nicole, why do you still want to marry this guy? And that's when Nicole really paused for a while. And she says it's because she trusts him. Like, oh, God, no. Now, that was not even the most cringeworthy part of that segment. The most cringeworthy part was once again Ross opening up his stupid, tiny, smiling mouth because he can never keep his line straight and he's always laughing and giggling. He says, huh, playa's gotta play. Let me repeat that. Russ from Oklahoma said playa's gotta play. And that's the sound of me being speechless because I really don't even know what to say anymore. I really didn't know what to say when Juan came on screen either because I thought we were freaking done with Juan. Not even going to talk about it. Same old, same old. He tried to plant a little seed for them for a next season of 90 Day Fiancé. Oh, Paolo knows that she has feelings for someone else. She knows what I'm talking about. Nope, nope, nope. Don't believe it. Fake news. No, I'm not buying it. Enough with Russ and Paola and Juan. We can talk about Luis, however, because he was basically squatting in Molly's house. Sean sincerely felt bad for Molly. You could tell in the way, just the tone of her voice, the way she turned towards Molly. Like, okay, enough of these other jackasses over here. Seriously, this guy is a fucking asshole. What are you going to do? And Molly's like, you know what? He's a total jerk, but the divorce is almost final. I am not going to be paying for him for the next 10 years. That is not going to happen. He never followed through on his paperwork to even get to that point. She's really not worried about Luis anymore. Now, Olivia comes out, and first of all, she looked so adorable. And she gets shit on Twitter because people are like, oh, put your teenager in her place. But you know what? What she has to say, I think, is very valid. And I respect her for that, that at least she's honest with her mom. Like, you know what? Don't approve of Luis. And turns out, doesn't sound like she's the biggest fan of Molly's new, I don't know if we want to call him boyfriend or love interest. I guess what I'm trying to say is I trust Olivia's radar or her gut intuition more than I trust Molly's. Now, with a little twist at the end, I thought we were going on for a third hour because Sean said at the beginning, we have 3 hours of this, but no, we got tricked into that like first 7 minutes of the third hour before it cut to 90 Day What Now. We get a little talk, a little preview about this Anfisa webcam thing. So we get the flashback to the tell-all last year, the flashback of George visiting the attorney's office for divorcing and him straight up lying. And then when Sean calls him on it, he does that same freaking thing where he just laughs and he's like, hey, yeah, I lied. Interestingly enough, guess who wasn't laughing along this time? David. David, his telltale, just like George is lying, David's telltale is he gets straight faced and he immediately looks to Annie like, huh, is she worried about me lying? Huh, is she catching on to this? So yeah, David knows he needs to just zippy lippy because he does the same freaking lying shit as George. So then Sean comes up with the million-dollar question that we all want to know. Anfisa, after you've seen footage of George lying to you and proof of him lying to you over and over and over again, how do you trust someone like that? To which Anfisa simply says, I don't. Well, I mean, there you have it. Anfisa, whether George is the father of this kid or not, you just gave yourself the answer. You need to leave. You two do not belong together. Yeah, you think you might love one another, but no, 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 no. Just leave. And please, God, do not bring any more kids into this. Okay, well, next week we are going to pick up with more of the tell-all part two. Hopefully we get some more answers. And God, I would love if they would have some sort of DNA person from Dr. Phil or Jerry Springer or whatever shows still do the DNA things. I would love them to just come on in, do the quick DNA thing, and we know. But of course, we know that's not going to happen because my dreams never come true. If they did, I would be a size 2. But you know what? I may not have a fast metabolism, but I do have 90 Day Fiancé. What now? Okay, let's start out with Patrick. Remember our little backflipper or gymnast, and Miriam, the most gorgeous Parisian woman you have ever seen. Now, just to refresh your memory, Patrick is a DJ. He loves mixed martial arts. He also describes himself as a full-time dad, but his daughter lives full-time at her mom's house, and they co-parent. Not quite sure how that equation works out, full-time dad, but the daughter lives at her mom's house, you live at your mom's. I think you should just say we share custody, we co-parent. Might be a little more clear. Also, we get a flashback of that Cela Ward blouse. You know I love that. And we find out Miriam broke up with her boyfriend. Kind of makes me sad because you can tell that she's heartbroken. Now, she has agreed to come visit Patrick and Mama Letty. Yep, you remember her? She's coming to visit them, and she's going to stay with Patrick. Mama Letty is not too happy about this. You see, she thinks that Miriam is insignificant. And that instantly reminded me of Real Housewives of Melbourne and M'lady Gina Liano. Now, if you don't know who Gina Liano is, you better go check her out because she's going to be one of the best housewives to ever enter your periphery, your aura. Or you might just take her into your heart like I have. Okay, let's fast forward a little bit. Miriam arrives. Her boyfriend didn't like that Patrick had gone to France. Even though they've broken up, he's not too happy that Miriam has gone to visit Patrick in Kentucky either. Poor Miriam has no idea that she is just about to go into Mama Letty's very own kitchen. You see, Patrick thinks it's a great idea to give his mom the opportunity to just poison and kill his maybe future girlfriend. I hope not, but we'll get to that in a moment. So Miriam is going over there. She's going to have like a good down-home meal. Thank God everything went smoothly. I think Mama Letty saw like, okay, actually, she's a nice girl. Maybe my son is kind of, aggressive and scary and pursues something that he clearly can't get. Now he pursues it even further during what he calls a romantic Italian dinner. I just called it the most uncomfortable dinner since the river cruise that they went on. You might have put it out of your memory. It's almost gone in mine, but it was just so bad that I still get like little cringe sweats when I think of it. But they go to this romantic Italian dinner and they're wearing matching sweatshirts and ponytails. Yeah, remember the last time you went for a romantic Italian dinner and you wore your sweatshirt? Right. So they're eating dinner, they're having this little discussion, and Patrick just comes out with it and says, okay, so can we date now? Well, shit, if you didn't scare her away already, you would have scared her away then. Or maybe it's just me. I mean, the instant a guy shows interest in me, I'm like, oh, what the fuck is wrong with you? But Patrick's staring at you directly in the eye with that top knot on top of his head, it's freaking scary. So Miriam, I gotta tell you, she actually did a genius job of getting out of it because she just says like, maybe in the future, but you know, I need to be in a good headspace, make sure I'm over my ex and, you know, just kind of keep things slow, make sure we're all on the right path. But no, does Patrick give up? Sure as shit not. He says, well, can I give you a hug and a kiss before you leave? Like, holy freaking creeper, he did the same thing after the river cruise. Remember that? They got off the little thing and he's like, I'm going to kiss you now. Is that okay? What the hell are you supposed to say? Like, Jesus Christ, back off. Okay, so she goes back to France and hopefully she just ghosts him. If you're listening, Miriam, I highly, highly suggest, I'll give you this advice free of charge, change your phone number. Now, speaking of changing phone numbers, let's talk about Danielle and Mohammed. We find Danielle back with her best friend, Beth, you know, Sandusky Beth. We all love her, all have a special place in our hearts for Sandusky's little starlight. They are exercising, which is great. Beth looks fantastic, by the way. They're doing a little high knee. Well, hold on a second. Don't get carried away, Jody. Walking in place, okay? Perhaps sweating with the oldies. Nothing wrong with that. Richard is alive and well, supposedly. So good for them. Now, we also find out that Danielle is still going to nursing school. Let that sink in. Nursing school. I'm going to put a question mark there. Any medical professionals out there that have some concerns, contact me. Let's deep dive into this because I have some serious concerns. So they sit down and Beth's like, okay, so what's the deal? What's going on with you and Mohammed? You know, why are these cameras here in my living room watching me sweat to the oldies? And Danielle says, well, I reached out to him. I was in a bind and I needed him to help me. And she's got that huge, scary smile on her face. What bind could she have been in that she would need Mohammed's help? Like, are we talking like a physical, like she was bound, like in a bind? He ain't gonna help you. He's not gonna help you unless it's tying a cinder block to your hands and feet and dumping you in an ocean. Let's be honest. We know that he has it in him, and I'm not going to say that thought hasn't crossed all of our minds. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Last thing I need is to be locked up because knowing my luck, I'm going to be in there with Danielle. Now, they need to serve him, so they got to find out where he's at. So they decide to do a little stalking, and I got to tell you, our Beth girl knows how to do it. They zoom in on the background of some photos that he's taken, and they see some buildings with flags on top. Whoa. Okay, well, at least they have it narrowed down to, oh, you know, every government office, post office, school. They're getting somewhere at least. And you know what? Don't feel too bad for Danielle because, you guys, she is a wanted woman. She's been dating this guy named Nelson. You heard that right, Nelson. I think it's supposed to be Nelson, but it's much more fun to say Nelson. And they've been dating long distance, real long. Now, Danielle says he's there for her. They are seeing each other, which is an interesting choice of words, seeing each other, but it's long distance. And you've never met each other, but okay, Danielle. But they're also open to seeing other people. So she decides that she is going to go and meet Nelson. He lives in Maryland. And although this international guy and all of these international guys are reaching out to her, her heart's set on Nelson. She's going to make it happen. She's going to drive 6 hours there, but don't get any ideas. She says she's not a floozy. She's going to be denied because I'm staying at a hotel that night. Okay. So Nelson is in Maryland. I forgot. I actually pronounced Maryland correctly. I need to go with Danielle's, and it's called Maryland. She's going to see Nelson in Maryland because he's in arrested with her, you know, as every 35-year-old single guy is. So we fast forward to her driving to Nelson's house, and he's not picking up the phone. God, so weird. What could be going on? Well, we better give him a ring. Ring, ring, ring. Hi, Nelson. I'm on my way and I'm excited to see you. Give me a call back. Nothing. Ring, ring, ring. Hi, Nelson. This is Danielle. I'll be there soon. Are we still meeting at your house? Give me a call back. And then the next time, mailbox is full. Fast forward to Danielle at this man Nelson's house, peering into his front door window, and she's still calling him, calling him, calling him. Now, don't be hard on Danielle, because you know what? She says it's a curse. Mohammed has cursed her because it all started with him. Okay, sure, Jan. So she's just gonna continue looking for love. She's not going to give up on it because she will not be ignored, Nelson. Guys, a little concerned about Nelson, all right? Just saying maybe we should check up on him and make sure Danielle's not in his house pulling a Kathy Bates in Misery. You know what couple does seem to be experiencing misery? Josh and Ika. Man, call me crazy, but I don't see this couple lasting. Now, Josh has discovered his top teeth. He showed them to the camera. Okay, very funny. Now, Ika, let's just take a moment to respect her eyebrow journey. They've gone places. They have changed shape. They've gone north. They've gone south. They've gone east. They've gone west. They've narrowed. And they are just settled a little lower. Okay? They, I'm going to say they're better. But I don't think they are at their full potential yet. But she's trying. Okay? She's working with it. Seems like Josh is working now too because they have purchased a home or a rental together and they're not living with the roommates anymore. Probably a good thing because now Josh and his friend Joe, remember the one who looked like perhaps he would go to rallies for the more racist side? I'm trying to put that, you know, in a sort of context for you. You get the idea? Well, they're not talking anymore. I'm going to take a gander and say Joe's not really missing Josh and Ika too much anyway. Well, here's the big story besides the big fake boobs that I think Ika got after the airing. They are going to do IVF because, as Ika says, Josh is castrated. Harsh term, but maybe not as harsh as her mom calling him a boy man or a girl. But, you know, this whole vasectomy thing, they can figure out how to get her pregnant with her eggs and his sperm without reversing the vasectomy. They got to go through IVF. So their whole little catch-up special is, when are they going to go through IVF? She wants it like yesterday, and he's telling her we got to hold off a year or two. Now, as much as I think Ika is a lot, she's a lot of personality, I kind of believe her when she says that Josh is the type of person who is going to say, okay, well, let's wait 1 or 2 years, freeze your eggs. And that really is just a way of prolonging it into, you know, 4, 5, or never years. My prognosis for this couple isn't good. I actually hope that they don't bring kids into it because something's just not right with either of them. Also not right, Courtney's extensions. Oh yeah, we're heading down to Florida and we're going to talk about Courtney and Antonio. Oh, Courtney, Courtney, Courtney. She is a whole lot of look. She has used her 90-day fiancé check to shop Sephora and Ulta frequently. She's just a lot to look at now. We find out since the last time we saw this couple in the tell-all, they went traveling together. They've been kind of together, kind of apart. It's very weird because when Courtney is at brunch with her friends and they're like, let's take a selfie at brunch, you know, those people that you want to freaking throw your menu at across the restaurant. Yeah, well, they're there. She's telling her friends, I don't know what to do about Antonio. And they're like, oh God, here we go again. And I think they're just as confused as we are because Courtney says that they are together. But then when you hear from Antonio himself, it doesn't sound like that at all. He's like, ah, yeah, I care about her. But he's not making it sound like it's exclusive. So something's not adding up. I don't know. You guys tell me, what do you think the story is? Is he really leading her on? Or is she misreading things, thinking he's leading her on? Well, at the time of this taping, we find out that Courtney's pretty upset because Antonio flew to New York and didn't tell Courtney he was going there and didn't say like, hey, I want to meet up with you. You're only a couple hours away. So she's all pissed off and she's like, that's it. I'm going to call it off with him. My heart can't take it. But meanwhile, Antonio's like, oh, I, Antonio, were as a model. I meet Courtney. I live in Spain. I go to New York for a job. I don't have time to see Courtney. But he's got time to be taking selfies on the street. So in case you didn't understand my Antonio ease there, yeah, he's in New York. Basically, he just doesn't want to see her. Courtney FaceTimes him, and she definitely did herself all up, and she summons all the tears she can. And she's like, I just don't think I can see you anymore. And he's like, yeah, I cannot see you anymore either, because although they're on FaceTime, he's holding up the fucking phone to his ear like an idiot. and wipes away a couple of his fake tears. And he's like, oh, okay, sweet. Sounds good. Adios. So yeah, she's going to move on. She's going to go into her kitchen every morning, talk with her moms and pops, who I think really belong in the Midwest still, not so much in Orlando, because her mom, I mean, she could definitely whip up a casserole with Vicki Gumbelson and I, because she's all, hey, Courtney, how you doing? Something wrong? You know, I think Antonio's just comfy being a bachelor. So her advice is that Courtney find an American guy, settle down. My advice to Courtney is just look into that gum surgery, and also let's cool it off with the bold lip. Go to a neutral lip, much like Lizzie has learned. We're going to get to her in a moment, but first we're going to go to kind of a dark place, and that is Devar and Melanie. Holy shit. I had high hopes for these two last we saw them, but things have changed. They have a newborn daughter now. She is absolutely adorable. Devar is working as a diver. I'm guessing maybe it's a seasonal thing, because I thought they lived in like Ohio or something, but maybe there's oceans in Ohio that I don't know about. Never said I was a geography genius. What happens is that Devar seems to be a very doting dad and husband. Even Bev shows up and is like, holy shit, Devar, he's doing great. So Bev is all on board. Wow, I judged him and everything. And then all of a sudden, production shows up to record these two, or to tape these two, talking to him. And Devar is like, he's speaking in tongues or something. He's slurring. You can't understand him. He's got a hair trigger temper. He's flipping around Melanie's hair, breathing into her ear. It's bizarre. He's saying he's horny. It's crazy. Even production is annoyed with him. At one point, you hear the guy say, we've been on the same question for 7 minutes. To no one's surprise, Devar's been drinking, and Melanie really just loses it. And you actually see a for-real argument, whatever you want to call it, like a boil-over moment that every couple has. Melanie's like, what the fuck? He's drinking too much. You got to straighten your shit out. And I really liked how the producer was like, what are you going to do? You could tell they were concerned for her. And Melanie's like, you know what? I don't know, because this literally just happened. I don't know what I'm going to do. Now we get to the follow-up taping, and Melanie confronts him and is like, hey, you're being a great dad right now, but look, you got to pull your shit together. You got to stop drinking, or you're leaving. You're out of here. I'm not going to raise a daughter in this. Despite her vocal fry, which I know I have myself sometimes, Devar is like, you know what? You and I think the daughter's name is Ava, you're exactly where I want to be. I got to straighten myself out, and I promise to be better. And oh, it's all happy, happy. However, I'm going to be like a skeptical Bev, and I'm going to say, time will tell. Now, you ready for some Lizzie and Andre? Right. Well, Lizzie is trying to learn the beautiful Moldovan language. Okay, like what has he drugged you with for you to be thinking Moldovan is a, you know, like a love language? I haven't heard it, but I'm just going to go based on the fact that you say Andre's name, Andre, that it's not what you want to be like whispering sweet nothings with, okay? Well, Father Lizzie is not too happy these days, and it turns out Andre is not too happy either. Andre is not too happy because Father and family Lizzie are all over his ass about getting a job. And her family is not happy because he doesn't have a job. I really don't know which side to take with this couple because Andre is just home playing video games. However, Lizzie's showing up to dinner or breakfast with their dad wearing a brand new green velvet ugly shirt. So where's she getting the money for that? Well, their savings are gone. He's not working. Doesn't appear she's working. So there's this underlying tension that it seems assumed that Father Lizzie is just funding their lifestyle right now. And he's pissed. So he's like, you know, listen, I know you said Andre is going to wait to go to this truck driving school and get money then and get a good job. But you know what? Maybe I should talk to him. Just let him know my concerns, that it's not that I hate him, but we just have some concerns with how you're going to fund your lifestyle and pay your bills. So they go fishing one day, and the first thing out of Andre's mouth is, "Yes, I go fishing before I catch crawfish with my bare hands in river, actually." That is a direct quote. He caught crawfish with his bare hands in a river. Now, I'm from Illinois, so I don't know what the fuck a crawfish is, but I would have to think that it would be difficult to catch by hand in a river, especially if you have big Moldovan hands like Andre. Now, Father Lizzie just cuts to the chase because he can't stand looking at Andre's heavy bangs anymore. And he's like, "All right, listen, Andre, gotta tell you, women fall out of love with men when they lose respect for them. And I think Lizzie's gonna fall out of love with you because all you do is sit there and play your video games." It wasn't the most politically correct or gentle way of saying things, but Andre doesn't give a shit. Instead, he just disses Father Lizzie's offer of paying for him to go to school. But I'm going to talk about that in just a second, because I think I would kind of be with Andre there. So it's important to talk about this breakfast that they go to. So it is Lizzie, Andre, Becky with the good hair, the other sister, and Lizzie's parents. And they break the news that they are going to plan this Moldovan wedding in Moldova, and that it's going to only cost, I'm saying that, you know, sarcastically, only cost $15,000. Well, her family loses their shit. First of all, I think they lose their shit because they're tired of Andre speaking for Lizzie. You know, I think it was really, really shitty of Lizzie to make Andre tell the news. Like, it's your family. Why are you being like, "Oh, the man is going to speak for me"? Like, it's your family. You pipe up and spill the beans instead of having him do it. So that's fucking weird to begin with. But they're also pissed because they're like, so we're just all supposed to fly on over to Moldova. Neither of you have jobs. You're living in an apartment that, didn't we figure out that it was like her dad manages it, so they're probably not paying full rent? Like, what about working? What about getting a job? And then Becky with the good hair says that she's getting married. And I think that was actually kind of just like a bridezilla moment. She was using some other excuse, but really it was like, "It's my turn to get married." So they're all pissed off. But here's the thing. The only thing that I do agree with Andre on, because I do think having another wedding there is just absolutely stupid. I mean, maybe go there to visit or do something small with his family, but you don't need a 15 grand wedding. The only thing I do agree with him is that if he were to take money to go to truck driving school from Lizzie's dad, I absolutely agree that Lizzie's dad would hold that over his head forever. He would never let them forget it. It would be like a tie to him. They would never get out from underneath that. So I can see why he turned that down. Okay, so Lizzie sucks. Andre sucks. I don't want to see another season of them. I feel like it would just be a redo of Lauren and Alexi. Not interested. Also not interested in Alan and Kirlum, or however the hell you say her name. This couple is from the very first season, and they're the ones that met in Brazil. She's pregnant. They have this horrible game during their baby shower. People have to bob for binkies, their face in a bowl of water. Hopefully they didn't reuse that water between people. It was weird. She goes into labor, and oh my God, guess what happens? She gets back contractions, and then she has a baby. Oh my God, who would have thought? They have this baby, Liam. A photographer comes and takes really cute pictures of the baby, but then horrible pictures of the rest of them because she's got the wood paneling in the background with a picture frame that still has the cardboard edges. Minor detail, but it's a big one. That is all for 90 Day Fiancé. Holy shit. I think we're about an hour in, but we are not done yet. So stay tuned for a little Teen Mom 2 and Married at First Sight. Teen Mom 2 time. Buckle up, put on a bulletproof vest because we are going in. And Dr. Miami's going in because Brianna is ready for surgery. Remember, Javi is there to help her out, or help her out by putting his face all over camera because he cannot get enough of this Teen Mom fame. Now, Roxanne shows up on FaceTime, and we really get to see the root of where Brittany got her sass from, because Roxanne really is just, maybe she's gotten to whatever season it is of Teen Mom, whatever season of reality TV altogether that she's been on. And she's gotten to the point where I think she's just totally forgotten about the cameras because she is all too comfortable to show that really, I was going to say sassy, but that's the word that I say with my daughter, just that real salty bitch side. And I freaking love it. She's pissed at Brianna because she's pissed at Javi. She doesn't trust Javi. She thinks he's only out to get his face all over Teen Mom. And she is not going to have her granddaughters and her daughter be the reason that he gets to do so. So let's fast forward to Dr. Keep Your Hands Off Me. I mean, Dr. Miami, because this guy is super slimy. Just as slimy as Javi, which makes me concerned for Brianna. I mean, we already know that she doesn't have the best judgment with men, but the fact that she's about to go under the knife, and who does she have in the room but Dr. Miami and Javi? Someone needed to be there as an advocate for Brianna. We know Shirley, I mean, she's there in Miami, but she's recovering. Again, Brittany, call me. I will tag team this with you. I will be there for Brianna if you can't. Just call me. Now, at least Brittany is on her way, almost there with Roxanne and the kids, because she wants to beat up who she calls Captain Save-A-Ho, also known as Javi. God, I love her. Now, after surgery, Brianna is a total mess. And you know what? I don't even like being seen in my swimsuit, let alone after a major surgery. So good for Brianna that she has got the self-esteem, or maybe she just doesn't give a shit because she's getting a Teen Mom paycheck, because, man, she looked like a mix between Roxanne, who I think is beautiful, and Sloth from the Goonies. Okay, I'm just saying. With that said, after a little recovery time, Brianna makes her way with the help of, I think it's like one of those at-home nurse aides, something or other. And Shirley's there, and she just seemed to just bounce right back after that surgery. I mean, within hours, she was laying in bed, remember the little house coat, giving advice to anyone who just happened to walk in the room. But Brianna, she does not recover as nicely because she's a mess. She's crying for her mom. She's demanding someone get her on the phone. And no sooner than she asked for her mom, there she is. Brittany and Roxanne show up, and Javi is stunned. So much so that he doesn't even utter hello to either one of them. He just says, "You gotta be kidding me," and he's pissed. Well, Javi, what did you think was gonna happen? They are her family. You are an ex-boyfriend. They're the ones that are supposed to be there, right? They should be there. They're not invading your space, Mr. What the hell is Javi's last name? Whatever. They're not there to invade your space. You are the one that does not belong in this equation here. And God love the DeJesus women because they just walked right past Javi like he was freaking invisible. I mean, better that than Brittany hitting Javi with an uppercut right to that upper lip of his. But Roxanne, who, she musters up enough self-control to talk to Javi in his room. And in a very, what I thought, clever way, she confronts him about why he's speeding things up. Why propose so soon? Why keep talking about this deployment that never happens? She thinks he's only out to make himself look good. He could have cared less about Brianna. He could have cared less about her kids upping and moving to Delaware. She's just calling him on his bullshit. And you know what? As with everything with this family, I loved it. They just chase him away. And you know what? Whatever Brittany says to him and about him, I co-sign it. Well, what better teen mom to talk about next than Kale? Because we know that's exactly where Javi is going to run to so he can shit talk Brianna again. Kale really doesn't have a lot to say this episode because, as you and I both know, Janelle had more than enough to show for all these moms. So basically, we only get to learn that Kale saw Chris because Chris was taking care of the baby or had some visitation when she was in Hawaii. She's taking him to court because she thinks that he should be paying more child support. And she's pissed off that he doesn't have to pay as much because she makes a good amount of money from working hard. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I meant the easy teen mom paycheck. Now, it pisses me off when Kale talks about Chris being a bad dad. Oh, okay, it looks like he's a bad dad. It does look like he's not there a lot. He should be paying child support. I don't have any problem with that. She's right. He should be paying every dime he can towards this kid. However, Kale, come the fuck on. You chose this guy. And I will say it again. Remember when she went on the whole tour of this was a planned baby because Chris and I are great? Bullshit on everything else Kale ever has to say from here on out. All right, well, let's make our way to West Virginia because there she is, our little beauty, Leah. She is hyped up from her return from Hawaii, and that includes her eyebrows because those things have somehow grown like massive, oversized Jurassic Park caterpillars on her face. What the hell is going on with the eyebrows? Again, we're all on eyebrow journeys. I know I'm trying to grow mine out, but that was a bit much. Also a bit much was that little snotty one in the back seat with the lights flashing on her headphone set. Really, Leah, that is the last thing little sassy pants needs is more visual stimulation. You're already having issues with her being hyper and beating up the other ones. Take the stimuli down a level. Now we also get to see Miss Victoria, Leah's sister. Is it just me, or is Victoria moving from apartment to duplex to townhome every other episode? I know for a fact last time that they were in an apartment because there was some sort of little balcony off of a kitchen that they were sitting in when they were both high as fuck, but now they're in that weird duplex. Blah, blah, blah. They both kind of look a little high. There's a PSA for muscular dystrophy, as always. And then we look on and we see that the little one is body slamming Allie. Good timing, Leah. Well, things didn't get any worse for Allie being body slammed by her own siblings. The school district has cracked down on their own. And I want to figure out what the hell happened because we learned that Allie's aide at her school was being transferred or dropped or they're stopping services. The only thing I can really say badly about Leah in this scene is she really should not have said anything in front of Allie until she got it all figured out, talked to Corey about it, talked to the school or school board or whoever she needed to talk about it. Otherwise, she reacted like any parent, like any mom would have. You know I'm not Leah's biggest fan, but I myself am confused. Because if Allie truly had an IEP, which Corey thankfully cleared up because we know Leah wasn't going to, she should have an aide if it's written in her IEP. Like, that is the law. Unless it was something like the aide was also in the classroom for other duties or for other needs of other students, and Allie was just kind of informally getting additional help. Otherwise, I don't see how that would go down. It just doesn't make much sense from my perspective as a parent or as a former teacher. If you have some insight, maybe you are a teacher in West Virginia, let me know what you think because that seemed very strange. Maybe you can just go take a quick Google break right now because I'm just going to cover Chelsea. Let me know if you find anything on the Googs. Now, Watson goes to a dinosaur museum. Mother Chelsea and Chelsea like to eat food at restaurants. And Aubrey has to go see ADAM at the visitation center. And that gives Chelsea the boo-hoos because she's got to go fill out paperwork. And scene. Now let's get to Janelle. Holy shit, you guys. I didn't get to see this episode until after it aired. Saw a lot of buzz about it. But you know me, I like to keep things very honest and real. So I don't like to read comments and posts and memes and stuff about the show until I see it because I want to get my own ideas. It was hard because, of course, there's a lot of talk about Janelle. But seeing this, oh my God, I literally have my hands in the air and I'm shaking them. So let's just get down to it. Janelle picks up Jace. She's driving with him. He's in the front seat. Of course, we've covered this. Is this the law? Is it not? Looks like it's against the law to me, but, you know, I'm not a full-time law enforcement officer in the great state of North or South Carolina. So one of the little tidbits in this scene that I really enjoyed, because I love seeing Janelle's face just fall out of disappointment, was when Jace pulled out that piece of paper and he's like, hey, what's this? And Janelle says, oh, it's my proof or my identification when I had to go change my name, change my last name to Eason because I got married. And then Jace is like, oh, I want to change my last name too. And then Janelle gets this smile on her face, this smug, all-knowing look. And she's like, oh, you want to change your last name to Eason? Psych. No, he doesn't. Jace is like, no, hell no. Why the fuck would I want to do that? And no, he didn't say that, but we all know Jace. That's exactly what he was thinking in his head, down to that exact phrase. No, what the fuck were you thinking? So, okay, Janelle's driving. This white truck appears to zoom up on her driver's side. Okay, look at me like I'm testifying in a traffic court. This truck zooms up on her left side. Janelle's eyes start getting all shifty, but, you know, is that really any change than what we normally see Janelle do? No. Well, then it appears that this white truck is trying to change lanes to just get around this little, what do they call that, a wolf pack, you know, when all the cars are around the same area. So Janelle gets in the position where this guy is behind her, and she decides that she is going to slow down, and she is so proud of herself, dude, to let this guy just linger behind her. So the guy starts tailgating her. Okay, we've all seen this happen, whether you've been in the position yourself or you've seen it go down. It happens. But she loved purposely slowing down to piss this guy off. Then the guy zooms around on the shoulder of the road over to the right and then checks his brakes so that Janelle then has to slam on her brakes, which is where you saw Jace's head go forward. That is when she loses it, starts speeding up, and then yelling at Jace, like, get your phone out, get your phone out, give me your phone. Okay, road rage, and then we have texting and dialing when you're speeding. Just, ooh, perfect combination, you stupid bitch. And that's right, I said stupid bitch because she absolutely is. Now, what happened next? I got to tell you, I love watching The First 48 on A&E. And if you love shows that have, you know, law enforcement and drama and real life cases, get yourself over there and watch old episodes, The First 48. But anyway, that show can be pretty graphic about things. And even watching that show regularly and seeing Janelle do all this shit, it scared the crap out of me. So Janelle starts calling 911. She's flying down the highway to follow this guy and then follows him into his neighborhood down a dirt road. Like, this is not just an easy little, you know, she took the off ramp. No. She follows this guy into the little neighborhood, same smug, scary ass smile on her face that she had when Jace psyched her out about the last name. And Jace is just sitting there, staring at Janelle, like, what is going on? And that's when Janelle grabs her handgun. She's all too eager to pull it out. And Jace makes a comment like, yeah, if that guy does anything, I got a Nerf gun here. I can just pull out my Nerf gun and just boom, whip it out and shoot. But if you watch Jace, okay, there's times when he scared us all, but I was really watching him when he said that. And his eyes were not on his Nerf gun. His eyes were on Janelle's gun. So we got gun right next to Janelle and Jace, and she calls up David, you know, because he's going to calm her down. Right. Perfect person to call when you're all fired up. And she is taking photos of this guy as she's screaming at David. She's taking photos of the guy's car, the guy's house. So as any normal human would, after a crazy person followed them off the highway into their driveway, the guy starts yelling at her like, I'm calling the cops. What are you doing? And it's at that point Janelle just throws her truck in reverse, takes out the mailbox, and then is like, oh, oops, didn't mean to do that. So, of course, the guy's going to get pissed and mad, and then he tries to back Janelle in. Now, do I think he should have done that? No, but adrenaline is flowing here, there, and everywhere. Janelle is now beyond any level of rage I can recall. Perhaps she has been just as upset before, but I feel my heart beating right now, so I cannot even imagine what Jace was going through watching this. So Janelle then decides she's going to try to get out of there. Well, in this whole kerfuffle, the cars collide, the guy hits Janelle's or Janelle hits his, and now she's upset because her car was hit. And that's when Janelle screams, dude, for about the 50th time. She throws her car into park, jumps out of the car with her gun. Now, MTV doesn't show what happens next, but they tell us on one of those awesome black screens that she pulled out a weapon, and then next thing we know, she's back in the car, zooming down the dirt road again. David's on the phone saying, why the hell would you ever follow someone to their house? You're a freaking idiot. Well, then Janelle's pissed because he's not backing her up, and I'm sure she's going to boohoo about that later. Like, you never were on my side. So she hangs up the phone, throws the phone. Again, Jace is witnessing all of this. He's probably thinking, my mom's going to kill someone, or someone's going to kill my mom. We're going to get in a car accident. He's being Janelle's lookout, like her wingman, as they're going down the road. And he's like, oh, you lost him. Sweet. And then Janelle sees the cop lights behind her. She starts crying. She's calling the producer on the phone like, oh, come get Jace. I got to drop off Jace. This cop is pulling me over. Jace is freaking terrified. If you look at his face, as soon as Janelle says the police officers are there, they're pulling her over, you see Jace start blinking really fast. He starts twitching. Clearly his anxiety is at a level probably higher than most of us have ever experienced. But it doesn't end there, because they ask Janelle to get out of the car, and Jace is then left alone in the car with what appears to be the gun still sitting next to him in the dash area. Care to explain that one? State police, you mean to tell me there has been a road rage incident? She's talking about pulling a handgun. I'm sure the guy called. She's got a gun. And you have the kid sitting in there like no one's searching the car yet. He was in there long enough that he was calling up Babs being like, hey, mom got pulled over and she was chasing a guy. We were in a guy's driveway and now the police are here. Can you even imagine Babs on the other end hearing this? Can you imagine getting that call from your child? Oh my God. It really makes me long for the simple days when it was just Kiefer and her getting high on the grassy knoll. All of us, keep Jace in our prayers. I mean, this is not even a joke, me saying this. The kid does not stand a chance. And with that, we say goodbye to the girls for this week. But you know what? We're not done yet, because we still got Married at First Sight coming right up. Guys, Married at First Sight this season. You were right. I wasn't going to watch it. And now, just as always, I'm totally hooked. Now, I have to talk about me and Tristan because I just finished watching and I am so confused. I feel like I'm even more confused than Tristan was because, okay, let's just jump right into it. He's at the airport and he's been sitting there for hours and he's like, what the hell? Clearly, no one's getting answers. So, he goes back to a hotel, production leaves. They're trying to figure out why Mia is even being detained. No one's telling them anything. Fast forward to the next day, producer shows up and they figured it out. Go into the room, they sit Tristan down. It's very dramatic. They hand over this envelope. Turns out Mia, as we already know, right? She was arrested because she had a warrant out for her arrest. Three of the charges were for stalking, and the other one was for that fraudulent credit card usage. So Tristan is like, what the hell? But he can't question too much because production and Dr. Jessica, who comes up on the laptop with her sexy librarian glasses, they are all too eager to put the disclaimer out there that they did do their background checks. Everyone checked. No one is responsible. Or, I mean, I guess I should say no one should pass judgment because there's two sides to every story. Well, poor Tristan doesn't know what to do. He says he just wants to see her. So Dr. Jessica calls on up and she says, you know what, Tristan, if there's anything that can make you feel any better, I know there really is no one else that knows what you're going through, but please know all the time that we spent with Mia, none of us think this is the Mia we fell in love with. Okay, well, you're falling in love with her. Let's just slow it down, Jessica. But now it's all on Tristan's shoulders anyway, because he has to make the decision because he's legally married. What are you going to do, Tristan? Of course, he doesn't know what he's going to do because all he can do is wait it out and hear Mia's side. So 2 days later, Mia is released and we see her for the first time. She is just calm as a cucumber, telling us that it's just this crazy coincidence. You see, her car was stolen and then this person stole her identity. It's so not a big deal. They let her go. Crazy, crazy mix up. Okay, well, do we believe this? I'm not so sure, but Dr. Cal and Dr. Pepper were like, okay, we're all good. Cool. Carry on then. And Mia makes her way down to Tristan's room, opens the door, falls into his chest and just says she misses him so much. It's so good to be with him. She feels so safe. That's a change from the girl who was saying that she could have caught the herp from him on their wedding day and she didn't even want to freaking go near him or look at him in the eye. The tables have turned. Now, once they sit down, get a little comfortable, have a little hug, Mia ever so casually asks to see the police report because, guess she didn't see it. It's so weird. Let me see that thing. Oh, God. Oh, yeah, it's all made up. Such a big mistake. That's why they must have let me go. So strange. Wait, let me read that more. Things are not adding up for me. And Tristan, as much as I love what he's giving us so far, what is in the back of his mind? He thinks that just this mistaken identity thing really is just a twist of fate. He's like the anti-Jeffy, right? Like, he trusts too easily. If that would have been me and production would have handed me a police report with warrants on it, I would have been not waiting on the couch for Mia to come back. I would have been at least 16 to 18 hours deep into the pages of Google. I probably would have scoured all the state databases, every square inch of Facebook, Instagram. I would have known more about Mia than Mia knows about Mia, but that's just me. Call me a little romantic. Well, speaking of romance, let's talk about Amber and Dave because they seem to be hitting it off. Amber has applied probably 6 or 7 layers of lip gloss. It was a lot. It was not distracting us from the sides of her teeth, unfortunately, nor was it distracting me from the fact that she keeps talking about having babies. Slow it down. You're going to freak this guy out. Dave, on the other hand, as much as I'm side-eyeing Amber already, I don't know what it is. Something's up. But Dave just loves what she is given. And by loving what she's giving, I mean he loves what he's seeing, which is her banging body. That's his words. So they go and get this massage, and Amber starts asking where he likes to get touched the most. He says the back of his neck and the back of his head, and she's like, oh, isn't that so weird? That's where I've been touching you, like, all the time. I love touching the back of your head. Okay, Amber, we get it. You want to sleep with him. Well, sure enough, fast forward and oh, guess what? They use the outdoor shower. Tee hee hee. Ooh, I have the blanket over my naked boob. Okay, these two are like high schoolers who have had sex for the first time and all they keep talking about is, so should we talk about last night? yeah, we can seal the deal with sex because we had sex last night. Remember what we did last night? We had sex last night. It was beyond uncomfortable. I cannot imagine they talk like this in their real life. And if they do, that's probably why they've been single this long. Now, there's a little twist that happens on the basketball court. And it's that Amber is a little scared to go back home because she used to date one of his friends. Well, Dave's friend, I'm guessing, is not really so much a friend as more of like a bro pal that they get drinks together, because Dave didn't make it sound like it was one of his best friends. He said they've gone to the bar a couple times and he knows who Amber is because he remembers this guy talking about Amber. And had he known that it was her, he wouldn't have gone through with it to begin with. Makes you pause for a second. What is it about Amber that Dave heard and why doesn't he like it? I'm guessing there has to be some sort of like sexual twist to it, or something she did that's embarrassing, something he did that's embarrassing. I'm not saying that's what it is. I don't know whether we want to know, but yeah, something's up. So let's talk about Bobby and Danielle, because I saved them for last, because let's just put it this way. If you've stuck with me this long for this long of a podcast, you get my sense of humor and you get what skeeves me out, and everything about Bobby skeeves me out. They're riding in this car to the El Dorado Casitas Royale Hotel, and this freaking dork is taking video out the window going, it's a trek through the jungle. Look, Danielle. And Danielle is just laughing away. She's got this high Madonna ponytail in the back, and she just thinks he is a cut up. I do not get what she sees in him. It's not the looks, right? I mean, I'm not saying something that we're not all thinking, right? And he's not even clever or charming. Even when he walked in their hotel room, he goes, oh, look, it looks like a little house. No, it's not a little house, Bobby. It's a hotel room, Robert. God, has he never been outside his home? Actually, he probably hasn't been outside his home, because can't you see him being the type that's like, I only like the food my mommy makes, and I only sleep in the beds that mother tucks me into. Just something is very creepy. Now, Danielle is still under this delusion or illusion that he's this charming southern man. For example, she said she needed an ibuprofen or a Tylenol, and then he said he'd be right back, and he went and got it. Well, she thinks that's great, but you know what? If that were me, I would have needed a lot more from Bobby, like shoes with lifts in them, like Tom Cruise, make him a little taller, and all the tools to give myself a lobotomy. Because this guy is unlike any other guy that has been on any reality marriage show, and his head is an upside down isosceles triangle. There, I said it. We are all thinking it. I can't take the geometry of his head. I just can't. Imagine if she gets pregnant and she's got to give birth to this kid. I mean, shit, you hear my kids screaming in the background right now. She'd be screaming that loud if she had to birth something. Let's just leave it at that. Now they roll some dice and they have hugging and kissing. And then he like rolls over and does this weird polar bear hug move. Maybe that's what he thinks sex is. That's how it works. But I guess Danielle doesn't need to worry about it, because the next morning, meanwhile, the other two, Amber and Dave, were banging it out in the outdoor shower. Danielle wakes up and says, oh, I just feel so rested today. And he's a good kisser. Well, it's a good thing she's rested, because it's a good thing the only thing that she's getting is his kissing, right? He also uses the word lover at this point. That should just disqualify anyone from anything. The only thing I can relate to Danielle at this point is that she said she needs some coffee and she needs some carbs, and she's starting to think Bobby is too good to be true. Now, I wouldn't say he's too good to be true. I mean, the guy was wearing a blue tank top and purple Yeah, you heard me. Purple shorts on a bike. But Danielle is, let's just call her an optimist. Let's just leave it there at that point. Now, their whole storyline is she going to be a stay-at-home mom or not? They're just going to drag that out for their little dun-dun-dun serious music. I'm not giving it too much thought. But now it's double date time, and oh, good. Everyone thinks each other fits together perfectly, just like Ken and Barbie. But where's Tristan and his wife? Okay, well, we know where they are. But these four are about to go swimming in Death's Cauldron. I don't know what the Mexican name for it was, but it freaked me out too. Danielle is afraid of heights. Those stairs did look rickety. And in Mexico, do they have like a, not the FDA or OSHA or something? It didn't look up to code. Let's leave it at that. I'd be scared too. Now, I wouldn't be mortified of heights like Danielle says, because I don't think that's the proper vocabulary. I think you are mortified of yourself or something. I just don't think that sounds right. But here's the thing. What we need to know is the moment that Bobby tried to slip into the same inner tube as Danielle would be the moment I would probably have to drown him. I mean, I can barely fit myself in an inner tube, and now you're going to try to squeeze your little pasty white body in with me? Get off. Move away, Bobby. He's weird. I feel like he would have been probably like a bubble boy if his parents had any say in it, or maybe he self-chose a bubble. Just putting that out there. Okay, well, that is enough for this week. Next week, we'll get to see more of these couples. And if you want to see more of me, check me out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at RealityVPod everywhere. Remember to check out Moms on the Rocks. And my buddy Carrie had me on her podcast, Sip and Shine, this week. We talked celebrity blind items, lots of fun stuff. So head on over there. And until next week, stay salty.